This is a podcast from ABC Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. On September 11, 2001, Beverly Bass was piloting an American Airlines flight from Paris to Dallas when an unexpected message came over her radio that there had been a terrorist attack in the United States and that she had to land her plane immediately in the isolated town of Gander, Newfoundland, in Canada. When Beverly went back to Gander on September 11, 2011, for the 10th anniversary of the attacks, she wasn't to know that two people she spoke to there, Irene Sankoff and David Hine, were to write a hit musical about what had happened in the town of Gander in the week after September 11, 2001, and that Beverly would be one of the main characters. That musical is Come From Away, which has just opened in Sydney after a season in Melbourne cut short by COVID. Beverly Bass is our guest on Overnights to talk about what happened on that terrible day in 2001 and how her life changed forever because of this extraordinary stage musical. At the moment, she is in Texas at a horse show. Beverly, welcome to Overnights.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
This year marks 20 years since the September 11 attacks. What do you think about when that date comes around?
You know, there are some days when it seems like it just happened and it was very recent. And it really is hard for me to imagine that it has been 20 years, but it is a day that we never forget. And I flew for 7 years after 9/11, and you always thought about it. You thought, can we get through this day without any more, tragedy like we had at that time? So, we never stopped thinking about September 11.
Was it something you thought about before it happened? As a pilot, did you think about hijacking? Did you think about, the sorts of things that might happen?
Well, hijacking was so common in the late 60s and the early 70s. I mean, it was very prevalent at that time. And we actually go through training for those situations. But this was such a unique scenario because the hijackers actually breached the cockpit. And that was not common before. What they would do is they would have a gun or a bomb or whatever. And they dealt with the flight attendants. They had not breached the cockpit before. And that's what made this situation so unique. And it gave them the ability to take control of the aircraft and fly it into the towers, the Pentagon and such. And we were not trained for that. Nobody could ever imagine that that was going to happen.
In the years since Come From Away, how do you feel about talking about yourself so much?
Well, I know that's really hard because, believe it or not, I'm actually a very shy person. So I've had to overcome a good bit of that because public speaking would probably be the last thing on my list of things that I want to do. And I'm put in that situation so much now that if nothing else, I have to thank Come From Away from getting me over that hurdle because it was a dreadful one for me throughout my life. And now I can stand up and tell the Come From Away story in front of hundreds of people and I'm okay with it. So it's actually been a very positive thing for me personally.
You know, when you're in the cockpit flying from Paris to Dallas that day, September 11, 2001, and you hear what is going on, you're not thinking, yeah, there'll be a musical and I'll be one of the main characters.
Oh, my heavens, not ever. Even after we went back to Gander for the 10th anniversary and we did the interviews with the writers, David Hine and Irene Sankoff, we had done tons of interviews when we were there, but they were all looking for 5-second sound bites for the evening news. And when I was asked to do an interview with David and Irene, of course, I agreed to do it, but the interview lasted 4 hours. And afterwards, we just went back to Texas and I never thought of another thing about it. And 4 years later was when we got the call from the producers inviting us to the world premiere opening in La Jolla, California. We had no idea what we were going to see. I didn't even know the song Me in the Sky had been written, which chronicles my aviation career. So it was pretty amazing seeing it for the first time.
So many of the characters in come from away are kind of generic. They're generic townsfolk, generic passengers or airline staff. What was it about you that actually got you mentioned? Was it because you were the only pilot of maybe the 100 that landed there at Gander that day who went back for the 10th anniversary?
That is true. I was the only pilot who went back for the anniversary. And what made it really nice for David and Irene is that I was the only female captain in Gander. I was the only female captain at that time on a 777 flying worldwide. And I think it helped their story that I was the first female captain with American. So it was kind of like the cherry on top of their cupcake. It gave them a lot to work with as far as portraying my position in the show, I guess you might say.
So that day, September 11, how are you told about what has happened, in New York and in Pennsylvania and in Washington? Do they give you all the details, or do they just say, look, land as soon as possible? What goes on? And then what do you tell the passengers on your plane? Because it's your responsibility to keep them safe.
Right. Excellent question. We were westbound. We had left Paris that morning. We were right over the middle of the North Atlantic. And when you're over international waters, you are out of range of air traffic control. So we monitor a frequency that is called air-to-air frequency, and all pilots must monitor that station. And so an airplane in front of us came on the radio and said that an airplane had hit the World Trade Center. And we, my co-pilot and I, talked about it. And like many of newscasters in New York, they thought it was a light airplane. And certainly that is tragic, but, you know, never for a moment entered our minds that it was an airliner. And certainly we never thought about it being one of our airplanes. And then I guess about 20 minutes later, we heard on that same frequency that the second tower had been hit. And with that came the word terrorism and an airliner. And that's when things changed for us. And then the next thing we heard was that New York's airspace was closed, which doesn't affect our flight. We come in on those flights. We fly a circle route and come in over northern Canada, down over Chicago, and then into the Dallas-Fort Worth area. But then they said all of the U.S. airspace was closing. And that, of course, was a game changer for us. We knew we would be diverting in Canada, and we assumed it would be Toronto, Montreal, Calgary, one of the larger cities. That was just the normal assumption for us as pilots. And then when we reached 50 degrees west longitude, which is actually the normal time to come in contact with Gander Control, they called us and said, American 49, land your airplane immediately in Gander, Newfoundland. And that was the first time we knew that we would actually be going to a much smaller town in Canada.
Had you even heard of Gander before this?
Yes, we as airline pilots are very familiar with St. John's, Halifax, Gander, because when you cross the North Atlantic, it is a requirement that you have an emergency airport that you can land the airplane at. Because remember, we're a twin-engine airplane. We're the largest twin-engine airplane in commercial aviation. And if you lose one of those engines en route, you must be able to land the airplane within 180 minutes. So before we coast out over the water, one of those airports is going to be in our flight planning to land at if we need to. So we're very familiar with Gander, but I would say that most airline pilots will retire with a 35-year career and they've never landed there.
How did you tell the passengers? What do you say to them?
Yeah, that was a very hard PA for me to make. And what I did is I wrote it out. I made up my mind I was not going to make up a mechanical problem. I was going to tell the truth, but not very much of it. And recognize I didn't know a lot at the time. I mean, we didn't know the airplane's been hijacked. We didn't know any of that. So I wrote it down. I brought my lead flight attendant up and I said, are you okay with this PA? Because remember, I'm sitting behind a locked cockpit door, it's the flight attendants who have to deal with the passengers. So my PA went exactly like this. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Captain Bass. There's been a crisis in the United States. All of the airspace is closed. We'll be landing our airplane in Gander, Newfoundland, and I'll get back to you with more information once we get on the ground. And that was my PA, and it worked.
Just a generic thing like that, just saying there's been a crisis in the United States, that could be anything. It could be a war. I mean, I don't think people even would have guessed that it was to do with flying planes into buildings.
No, they couldn't imagine. And of course, I didn't want to tell them that part for two reasons. One, they would worry about our airplane crashing, and they would worry about having one of the hijackers on our airplane. And that was the unknown. None of us knew who we had the back of our airplanes on that day. So I didn't want to say any more than I had to, but I did want to tell the truth.
What happened at American Airlines after that?
Oh, you know, it was a very sad time. We lost two airplanes, as you know, that day. And American Airlines was the last of the majors to file bankruptcy. Every one of our major airlines filed bankruptcy as a result of 9/11. And we went 10 years without hiring a single pilot. When we did finally hire again after 10 years, the very first pilot we hired was a young man by the name of Tom McGinnis, and he was actually the son of our co-pilot who was on the airplane that hit the North Tower. He was 15 years old when he lost his dad in that tragedy of 9/11. Oh, so how wonderful that he's flying for us today.
Yeah. Beverly Bass is our guest. As you heard, she was flying from Paris to Dallas and had to make an unscheduled stop in Gander, Newfoundland on September 11. And that, 10 years later, a couple of people start thinking, well, this could turn into a musical, which I find amazing. I mean, even having seen the show, it's a most beautiful musical, but no one thinks of September 11 and thinks about a musical. Were you a fan of musicals before that?
You know, I had been to Broadway numerous times, and I saw some of the big shows, you know, like the ones that everybody goes to. But I don't think any of us ever thought that this would be a musical. But as David and Irene will tell you, you cannot write a show that involves people from Newfoundland without incorporating it to music, because that is so much a part of their life. That's what they do. They have kitchen parties, and everybody comes, and they dance, and they bring instruments, and they sing. You know, their winters are so harsh. They live a very difficult life, and as a result of that, they're a very close-knit group of people. They help each other. They will tell you it's in their DNA. Yeah. It is what they have grown up doing, is helping people.
How important is it then, do you think, that what we saw on September 11 was the very worst in human behavior, but what you experienced was the very best, the way that the people of Gander took you into their hearts and into their lives?
That is absolutely true. And, you know, I have a lot of airline friends who are hesitant about seeing the show because, you know, it hit a lot of us very close to home. And I always tell them it is the most magnificent show. And it is exactly what you said. It demonstrates the epitome of kindness, which was during the worst tragedy in U.S. history. And I always tell them that there are a couple of sad moments in the show. There would have to be, or it couldn't be a true story, couldn't be realistic. But it is written in a way that it never allows you to dwell in those moments of sadness. It immediately moves to something happy or funny, and all of a sudden you have forgotten about being sad, because, you know, the next scene is fantastic. So it's that's how I convince a lot of airline people to see it. And afterwards, they are just so grateful. And they say, you're absolutely right. You're a better person when you walk out of the theater after seeing this show.
How long were you there on the ground in Gander? Because, of course, all flights were grounded for quite a few days.
I was there 5 days.
What did you do?
Well, my passengers did a whole lot more than I did. We didn't have cell phones back then. We didn't have pagers. And I felt like I was pretty much sequestered to the Comfort Inn because I never knew when America was going to call and say, round up your crew and get to the airport, you're going home. So I didn't want to miss that phone call. And there's a restaurant attached to the Comfort Inn called Jungle Jim's. And there's actually a tunnel from the Comfort Inn to the restaurant. I ate every meal there for 5 days. And the manager, Karen Mills, always knew where I was. So if American called, she knew I was at Jungle Jim's. She is still the manager today.
Wow.
And she had 14 rooms reserved for our 20-year anniversary, which, of course, now because of COVID, we won't be able to go.
But you were there for the 10th anniversary. And yes. Given the pilots, co-pilots, cabin crew, all that, over 100 pilots landed in Gander on that day. You were the only one who went back for the 10th anniversary, as we mentioned. Why was that? And were you surprised to find that you were the only one?
Yes, but here's the reason I went back. I got a phone call from an Austrian film crew, and they were actually going to Gander on the 10th anniversary to film Nick and Diane, the couple who met and fell in love and ultimately got married in the show. And he asked me, he said, are you going back for the 10th anniversary? And I said, no, I didn't know anything about it. And he said, well, we're going to film Nick and Diane, and we would love it if you would go. You know, and I always wanted to take my family back. I knew that 9/11 was always going to be a part of history, and I wanted my family to know where I spent those 5 days. Well, my kids were too young. I couldn't take them out of school, but my husband said, yes, I'd love to go. So that is the only reason we went back, was getting that phone call from the Austrian film crew. And so I'm sure the other pilots didn't go back because they didn't know anything was going on. None of us were contacted. So it was just luck of the draw.
And because of that, your life changed immeasurably in a way that you could not possibly imagine. How many times have you now seen this show?
I have seen the show 158 times. I have been to 12 openings. And, you know, I mean, I'm lucky. I have the ability to have a fleet of jets with American Airlines who can fly me to any city that the show is in. And I also know a lot of people in all of the cities. I mean, when you're in the airline business, people live all over the world. And, you know, I have so many friends that will call me and say, can you please come and go to the show with us? And, you know, they'll get a group of flight attendants together or pilots, and I always want to join them. So that's why I've been to so many shows. It's been great.
What makes it different every time, or is it different every time?
You know, it is a little different. And it's so funny because the actress in New York on Broadway, Jen Colella, she says, every time I see you in the audience, you react like it is the first time you've ever seen the show. And I said, I know, I can't help it. And it is true. And I think what part of that is actually, is I love seeing the people around me who are seeing it for the first time. I love seeing their response to every part of the show. And I think I just fall into that groove with them, you know, enjoying it with them.
How many countries and theaters have you seen it in?
Well, you know, the show is in, five countries, three continents, and I've been to the London opening, Toronto, Broadway, and all over the U.S. I've been to Winnipeg's opening, Australia, of course. I've just been everywhere.
I saw the show in Canada.
How
different is it to see it there? To see an audience, with the exception of people like me who were tourists in Toronto, so proud of their country and their contribution.
It is indeed different seeing it in Toronto because, just like you said, the Canadians are so proud of the show. And, you know, that was one of the interesting things about the Newfoundlanders seeing it for the first time. They were a little apprehensive. Because even though I didn't know about this, they come from an area in Canada where they're often made fun of, which I don't understand. I don't know if it's their accent or what, but they were very afraid to see it for the first time. And, you know, the writers actually took the show to Gander. That was one of the most important things to them because they knew most of those people would not have the ability to come to the U.S. and see it. So they took it to Gander, and it was the most exciting show I have ever been to and probably ever will. I don't think anything could top that, because within the first 5 minutes of the show, when they, you know, sang Me in the Rock, I think it gave the folks in Gander the credibility that they were so afraid they would not receive. So they love it. They absolutely love it.
Do you think you'll ever stop seeing it?
That is an excellent question. I must tell you, I hate to say this because I'm not a fan of COVID and what it has done to the world, but it did give me a little bit of downtime that I haven't had since 2015. So, you know, but we've been away from it now for a year or so, and I think we're all ready to get going again.
Beverly Bass is our guest, a pilot, pioneering, trailblazing pilot, not just on September 11. You've seen the show 158 times. I think you've probably heard more than 158 times that first all-female crew as well, December 30, 1986. Yeah. Do you ever get sick of talking about that?
No, because it was, you know, such an exciting time in my career. But, you know, I never felt like I did anything special. I've never considered myself a pioneer. And I remember when I was still working and telling the flight crews, they would always say to me, you know, you are such a pioneer. And I'm like, you know, maybe when I'm 50 years old, I'll be able to feel like I am. But I'm 69 right now, and I still struggle with that. I don't know. I don't think of myself as doing anything special. I was just a kid with a big dream, and I didn't accept no for an answer.
You had a dream, but did you have role models? Who were the female pilots that you thought, I'm going to follow in their footsteps? Because your daughter is a pilot. She's followed in your footsteps. She's had you to inspire her. Who inspired you?
I didn't have anybody. I didn't know a single female pilot. But I told my parents when I was 8 years old that I wanted to fly airplanes. And I used to go to the airport and watch the jets take off and land. And I wanted to take lessons when I was 16, which is when you can start. But my dad wouldn't let me because we were very busy in the horse business. And he wanted to keep me occupied in the horses, which was a great hobby for our family. But then when I went for college, I came home and I got in my car. I drove to the local airport and I signed up for flying lessons. I took my first lesson and I came home and I walked into my parents' house and I said, I'll fly for the rest of my life. And that ended up being true. I'm retired from American, but I fly a jet today that is owned by an individual. So I'm still flying jets and I'm an old woman.
Hardly. Young at heart, that's for sure. When you joined American Airlines, were you welcomed by the male pilots? I mean, did they think that women should be stewardesses, not pilots? And, you know, in this Me Too era, did you suffer anything that you think these days would certainly not be acceptable?
Not a single thing. American really was so proud of their female pilots, and they put us up on pedestals. And the guys were wonderful to me. That is the one line in the song that kind of bothers me, where it says, hey, lady, hey, baby, get me a drink. They never treated me like that. That was a little bit of artistic licensing. The rest of the song is quite accurate. But no, the guys, I think they were intrigued by us more than anything. We were novelties. We were interlopers. They had never, most of the guys had never had a female pilot in their cockpits. And we were just new to them. But what was most important is that, you know, we did a good job. We proved ourselves. And frankly, the airplane doesn't know if a man or a woman is flying it. So they always treated me great. I've never had a Me Too experience in my life. I was single with the airline for 8 years, and I've never been hit on. I've never been asked out. I don't know, maybe something was wrong with me. But no, I've never experienced it. And nor has my daughter. And my daughter is gorgeous, but she's a very professional pilot, and her career is just beginning.
Why do you think this show has been so successful?
Well, I think part of the reason, you know, first of all, nobody even knew what happened in Gander. And when we left Gander on September 15th, I remember saying to my flight crew, I just want the whole world to learn about the folks in Gander. but, you know, how's that going to happen? It's never going to happen. So this musical has now made it possible for the world to actually learn what they did for us and the beautiful stories that it represents. And I think it's just so important to see the show because, like I said earlier, you, if you aren't a better person when you walk out of the show, you miss something because it is just a magnificent display of kindness and the way people really should treat each other. Yeah. Unfortunately, they don't do that so much today, but it's how we all should treat each other.
The song about you in the show was used in a tribute to Broadway from performers around the world and sung by the lead in the Australian production. Are there things that happen to you even now that you simply cannot believe it's happening to you?
Yes, and I would say that song has become a worldwide phenomenon. There is not a day that goes by that I don't get an email or a message or a video clip or a YouTube clip of young girls who are performing the song in their grade schools. I mean, some as small as like 3 or 4 years old. I mean, it is unbelievable. And it is being performed by theater schools all over the world. And I'm literally shocked at that. But I get messages from parents thanking me for what I did. And I mean, I didn't write the song. Somebody else wrote it, but obviously it was written about my background. So that has shocked me more than anything because I'm contacted literally on a daily basis. And it's because of that song.
But it's because of what you did as well, Beverly, and we should never forget that. Not only with your incredible pioneering and trailblazing work, but also what you did to keep your passengers safe on September 11 and the way that they were embraced by a little town in Newfoundland in Canada. And Beverly, thank you so much for talking to us. I really appreciate your time. Good luck with number 159. Do you know when you're going to see the show again?
Yes, absolutely. It's getting ready to come to Dallas and Fort Worth, and you can bet I'll be there. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You're listening to Overnights with Rod Quinn.